remotely relevant. I sighed heavily. I guess it was going to come out eventually. When I was at university, I fell in with this elitist crowd of loners, and we were all completely enthralled by our classics professor. He filled us with wild passion for the ways of the ancient Greeks, and we started holding these, like, legit bacchanals. Unfortunately, we accidentally murdered this random farmer, and then one of our other friends to cover it up. And then our classics professor ran away and someone else committed suicide. And now everything is ruined and we are very sad and I have bad dreams.
I'll take that as a no, then.
Fine Silver looked faintly amused. Belrose didn't. Arden, we're trying to help you. Actually, I tucked my hands into the pockets of my jeans. You're trying to protect Caspian and his family, which is cool. But not necessarily the same thing as helping me. Fine Silver closed the laptop with a gentle click.
You make my job more difficult. But as far as your own interests are concerned, that is no bad thing.
It was the weirdest praise I'd ever received. But hey, I take it. Belrose seemed less impressed. But then I had no idea what could impress Belrose. I think it involved being Caspian Hart. By the way, he said as he herded us into the hall, Caspian asked me to make sure you received a parcel, so I brought it with me rather than having it couriered. It's by the door. Oh, right. Thanks. I waved them off politely, not entirely sure whether I was reassured by their visit or not, and turned the attention to the... Well, parcel didn't really do it justice. It was a work of art. This heavy, dark cream box, discreetly embossed with a golden logo, and tied up with the most austerely masculine bow I'd ever seen in my life. I carried it through into the dining area and put it on the table. What on earth had Caspian sent me? Well, it wasn't going to open itself. I undid the man ribbons and took off the lid. Inside, carefully folded and wrapped in tissue paper, was a coat. The sort of coat you saw on runways and in white-floored boutiques that only stocked about 3 garments. The sort of coat that probably cost more than any car I'd ever own. The sort of coat that had absolutely no business belonging to someone like me. There was a square of buttercream-coloured card lying on top of it. If nothing else, meeting Caspian had been a comprehensive education in shades of posh.
Thinking of you, dot, 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 was scrawled across the front.
I traced my fingers over the harsh slash of the T, the curve of the O, the generous loops of G and F. Caspian's hand. I hoped so. Then, turning it over, I burst out laughing as the message continued.
Dot, dot, dot. Getting cold because you never have a coat.
Oh, it had to be him. And whoever described lovey-dovey feelings as butterflies was way off base. Because I had swooning eels in my stomach. And I just about managed not to press his card against my heart like a Jane Austen character receiving a letter. Or dance around with it Disney heroine style while bluebirds flew around my head. Then I remembered the actual present. I drew the coat carefully from its tissue cocoon, shook it out and put it on. Of course, it was perfect. A simple black trench coat with a high collar and a belt. Clinging to my body so well it could have been tailored to my measurements. It made me feel beautiful and sexy and invincible, and also terrible for being materialistic enough to love it. But I did. I totally did. As I brushed my fingers over the smooth fabric, I tried to convince myself I should turn down the amazing present from my billionaire non-boyfriend. That was the right thing to do, wasn't it? I was pretty sure there were nebulous moral and social rules governing the acceptance of extravagant gifts from rich, slightly older men. But I was already sleeping with the rich, slightly older man in question, enthusiastically, and for free. And proportionally speaking, if you looked at it in terms of annual income, a coat like that was probably the equivalent of a packet of crisps and a pint of Stella to Caspian. Not a big deal at all. Except that wasn't true. Because this wasn't just a post-bang bunch of roses he'd told his assistant to arrange. It was something he'd chosen specially. While thinking of me. Well, while thinking I was a Dickensian urchin who would freeze to death come winter. But hey, it was a thought. It counted. And now I couldn't tell whether I was trying to talk myself into it or out of it. Or whether I felt good or bad or what. Maybe it would have been easier if Caspian had actually been here. He would have been able to tell me I deserved to be lavished in expensive gifts. And I could thank him. With my hands and mouth and body. And then wear the coat. Great. Now I was having a sexy fantasy that essentially amounted to prostituting myself for tailored outerwear. This was why I couldn't have nice things. Knowing how busy he was, I didn't want to interrupt him. So I ended up making my awkward thank you call in the evening. He picked up with velociraptor swiftness on the second ring.
Hello, Arden.
Good evening, Mr. Hart.
Did you... I mean... I sent you something. I trust it arrived.
Oh, bless. He sounded, well, not nervous exactly, but eager and trying to cover it up. And I suddenly felt a whole lot better about the coat. Yes, thank you. It's perfect.
I'm glad you like it.
Best thing in my entire wardrobe. I won't wear anything else ever again.
Anything else, you say? Now that I'd like to see.
I gave this weird bleaty little laugh because I hadn't been properly prepared for flirting. But I rallied. Made what was probably an ill-advised attempt at sultry. Come round then. I'll give you a private viewing.
You know I'd love to. But I'm waiting for a call from Tokyo, and I prefer to handle such things from my office.
I sighed. Soon, then.
I'll insist on it.
The growl in his voice sent happy little shivers racing down my spine. But it also made me miss him. Even more so when he hung up and I was alone again in the flat. Just me and my gorgeous coat. The last thing I needed was more complicated feelings centered on an item of clothing. But it highlighted the way he could reach into my world whenever he wanted, while his remained utterly inaccessible to me. Blah. Leaving my coat of many emotions draped over a chair back, I kicked Nick to see if he wanted to binge-watch Supergirl with me, having forgotten it was something like 1 o'clock in Boston and he was out to lunch with friends. Typical, really, that Nick would travel across the world without billionaire backing and be right at home, while I was living only an hour away and still didn't have a clue about anything. I mean, I was glad he was settled and had friends and stuff. But it reminded me that I needed to do the same. Instead of acting like my life was a £10 note I'd found in the gutter and couldn't decide whether it was okay to keep. I couldn't help coming back to what Caspian had said to me on the plane. All that stuff about daring to want things. I'd made it about him at the time. Partly because, well, I did want him. But also because I wasn't ready to think about it too deeply. You know, in case he was right. Which, to be honest, was looking increasingly likely. It was extra strange because I'd been full of dreams as a teenager. Mainly big, stupid, unrealistic dreams, like becoming a world-famous novelist, when, you know, I had no interest in actually writing novels. Except I'd also dreamed of going to Oxford, and I'd made that happen, and not when I managed to see past my raging imposter syndrome, just by fluke or accident. I'd wanted it and worked for it. And yet, having achieved it, all I'd done was fuck around and watch illegal streams of Pretty Little Liars with a mostly straight boy I'd half believed I was in love with. Was that it for me? Had I dreamed myself out? Except that wasn't true either. Despite having made no effort to get one, I wanted a career. I wanted to write my champagne bubble stories. I wanted to write for Milieu, or somewhere like it. But I kept acting like it didn't matter. Same as I treated Oxford like it didn't matter, because it was easier to say I hadn't tried than admit I wasn't good enough. That was the thing about Oxford, though. Apart from the top percentile of certified geniuses, most of us got in by believing we were somehow extraordinary, and spent our time there learning how to be average. Everyone dealt with it in different ways. Some people worked really hard to scrape a first. Some people worked really hard to secure a good 2-1. Some people switched universities or hung themselves from the light fittings. And I guess I'd given up. Decided it was better to be nothing on my own terms than found lacking on someone else's. Even if I knew their terms were fucking insane. I'd been through the educational equivalent of the Hunger Games and lived to tell the tale. Making me, at this point, I guess, Haymitch, riddled with survivor's guilt and basically dead inside. It was no way to live. Especially when you weren't actually the broken puppet of a sadistic dystopia, and more just a nice middle-class boy who'd turned failure into a monster, and then convinced himself he was too weak to face it. There'd been a time when Oxford had seen something in me, enough at any rate to offer me a place, and the fact I hadn't been what they'd thought I could be didn't mean I was nothing. It meant I was something else. Me. A boy Caspian Hart had travelled the Kinloch Bearvie to prove he wanted. A couple of hours later I wandered out onto the balcony. The wood was cold under my feet and the night nipped at me with sharp teeth. Beyond the shadowy trees the city was alive with lights, turquoise and silver and gold, as uncountable as stars. And one of those lights was Caspian, working late. It made me feel so close to him and so impossibly distant at the same time. Like I could have my Jane Eyre moment and whisper his name and he would hear me and know I was thinking about him. Although if it turned out Caspian was keeping a mentally ill spouse in his attic, I was going to be super miffed. Anyway, I sent him a text instead. A simple, how are things? I got back.
Fine. Thank you. Almost done.
My thumb traced, I miss you. Then, can I come over? Then, I miss you. Can I come over? But I didn't hit send on any of them. Instead of bridging the gap between us, his message had made him seem even further away. Because I suddenly realized I had no idea what Caspian did when he finished work and wasn't with me. His body suggested an aggressive gym regime. But beyond that, how could I know when I was consigned to One Hyde Park like the Lady of Shalott? Or possibly I was just looking at this the wrong way. I mean, I'd told Caspian I wanted to see more of him. But I'd taken it as read that he would make it happen. When actually I was the one choosing to wait around. Maybe he really was up in the tower, and I was supposed to be fighting through his briars, climbing his hair, breaking his curse, or whatever. Maybe in some strange way he was waiting for me. My hands were sweaty on the balcony rail. It was scary as fuck. Trying to break through 3 years of carefully cultivated whatever it was. especially when it had, in its own unhealthy little way, kept me safe. Or at the very least from having a nervous breakdown. But it wasn't helping me now. It was holding me back. After all, if I believed in Caspian, and Caspian believed in me, couldn't I believe in myself? Just a little bit. I took a deep breath and made my way back into this apartment. This proof rock had at least one peach in his life, and I damn well dared to eat it. Grabbing the coat Caspian had sent me, I slipped it on with a giddy little purr because it looked and felt so good. I did the buttons and turned up the collar and fastened the belt, and flicked an enigmatic glance at my reflection in the floor-to-ceiling windows, imagining myself lingering on some misty street corner in Budapest. Surely nobody could object to an uninvited visitor if they turned up in such a fabulous garment. It was a shame, really, about everything underneath it. I was going to be like Oscar Wilde, unable to live up to my blue china, except with a coat. Unless... Oh dear, I was having an idea. Probably a terrible idea. But Arden 2.0 embraced terrible ideas. I stripped, replaced my barbells with a glittery heart captive ring and a titanium rainbow pincher, and then put the coat back on. The basic idea was certainly sound, but the execution was lacking. My legs, poking out the bottom, looked particularly pale and unprepossessing. But it was fine, I could work with it. Rummaging around in my socks and pants drawer, I unearthed an unladded pair of lace-topped hold-ups and pulled them on. There. Much better. I also found a battered black trilby, got it angled coquettishly across one eye, and, as a final touch, I painted my lips harlot red. That was the actual name of the lipstick and a large part of the reason I'd bought it in the first place. A peek into the bedroom mirror and... Oh, wow. Well, that would do. That would definitely do. With the stockings and coat and the fuck-me lips and the shadow of the hat brim adding a touch of noir... I was a bona fide homme fatale. One last more, personal piece of preparation. Hoping lube wasn't going to squidge out of me embarrassingly. And I was good to go. Then I called for a car. Luckily, Caspian's employees were made of stern stuff, and Alicia, tonight's chauffeur, didn't bat an eyelash when I slipped into the back of the Maybach. Undressed like a slutty lunatic. It was late enough that the roads were relatively clear, for London anyway, so it only took about 15 minutes to get to Caspian's office. I watched the roads and buildings flash by in pockets of light and shadow, and the river that curled around them like a dark snake, its back a shifting kaleidoscope of the city's glitter. "You want me to wait?" Alicia asked as she took us past security, into the underground parking lot and pulled up outside the lift. I hesitated, not quite sure how to answer. This had the potential to be the shortest encounter of my life, but Arden 2.0 did not talk himself out of things. No, it's fine, thanks. I probably won't need you again tonight. I scrambled out of the car, clutching the mobile Belrose had given me way back when I'd first moved into One Hyde Park, since it also allowed emergency access to all of Caspian's buildings. Admittedly, I wasn't sure that fuck stop was the sort of emergency he'd had in mind, but it was nearly 10 o'clock at night. The building was all sealed up, and, even if it hadn't been, I could hardly have waltzed up to reception. Cheap tart in a greatcoat to see Caspian Hart. The lift whirred upward for what felt like a long time, and when it finally stopped moving, I stepped out into a silent, shadowy corridor. I vaguely remembered it from the last time I'd launched a one-man assault on Caspian's place of business, but it was different now. Eerie without people around. broken reflections from the city outside skittering across all the darkly shining glass. Caspian's floor was the only point of light. His office, its own soft glow. Just past his assistant's, thankfully, unattended desk. My heart flailed around in my chest. Okay. Okay. I was doing this. Chapter 10. My stocking feet made no noise on the plush carpets as I approached the office. My nerves were fluttery, but holding steady. I was feeling reasonably impressed with myself as I pushed open Caspian's door and went in. Or rather, I fell in. I didn't even know what I'd tripped over. My own misplaced optimism, I guess. But one minute I was sliding into Caspian's office, all sultry in my sex coat, and the next I was yelping in a heap on the ground. If anything romantic had taken place, Caspian's face lighting up with joy at the sight of me, that kind of thing, I was in no position to witness it. He sounded surprised, though, rather than horrified. So, that was good. Maybe.
Are you all right?
I nodded and rubbed my nose into the carpet. I meant to do this.
You did?
Absolutely. I was just, you know, sitting at home thinking about you working late, how tired you must be, and how hard you work in general. And it struck me that what you probably needed was for somebody to turn up uninvited and fall over.
That was very kind of you.
I still didn't dare look up. Are you laughing at me?
No. I'm glad to see you.
Oh, God, do you mean that?
Now I'm nodding. Do you need help?
Nope. I bounced to my feet, with only a small wince. I'm good. Caspian was standing by his desk, washed silver by the light from his computer screen. His face all shadows and angles, and so starkly beautiful that it made this whole venture seem absurd. What in God's name had I been thinking? How was someone like me supposed to seduce someone like him? How had I ever convinced myself I possessed that power? I mean, it was an excellent coat, but it wasn't magic. And I wasn't a prince. If anything, I was a frog. A frog in ill-considered lipstick. This was supposed to be sexy, I muttered.
Surely.
His voice had gone silk soft in the quiet room.
You're familiar enough with my tastes by now to know just how appealing I find the sight of you on the floor.
Well, that was slightly cheering. Really?
Yes, really. Though I like you best at my feet.
I managed to meet his eyes again. They were steely grey in the gloom and gleamed like the glass that surrounded us. My magnificent predator. So fierce and so lost. I can do that. My hands were shaky as I reached for my belt. But strangely enough, my confidence was back. Maybe he'd been right all along. It wasn't that fragile. It was true that compared to Caspian, I was short and skinny and apparently ridiculously clumsy, and as ordinary could be. But all it took was the way he looked at me. The things he said to me and wanted me to do for him. The fractures in his self-control shining like veins in marble. And I felt like the most powerful, desirable, wondrous person on the whole fucking planet. And God, I wanted to please him. Give him everything. Submission, desire, suffering, longing, safety. With him it all became the same. The same ache, the same need, the same... Oh, God! The same helpless love. button by button I bared myself. Halfway down, I realized I should probably have turned around and let the coat slip from my body, while I peeped coquettishly over my shoulder. So what I was having here was a stripping learning experience, but it didn't seem to matter. Because the moment I flashed lace, Caspian made this amazing sound, all rough and deep and lusty, and was away from his desk so fast his chair hit the window behind him. He prowled across the room, swift as a panther after prey, and then my coat was a pile on the floor and I was in his arms. Literally in his arms. Legs round his waist, lips against his, like some crazy movie kiss in the pouring rain. Except for the part where it wasn't raining and I was naked except for thigh highs and a hat. But still, I wrapped myself around him, tight as honeysuckle, and kissed and clung and clung and kissed until I was breathless and dizzy, and his mouth was a red smear and my eyes were full of stars. It was only when I felt something solid nudge the backs of my thighs that I realized he'd carried me to his desk. I shoved his laptop out of the way, grabbed him by the tie and pulled him down on top of me. The glass was gasp-inducingly cold against my unprotected back, but he was blissfully warm. I shuddered, caught in a kind of delirious skin confusion, an ice and fire sandwich. And then Caspian's mouth closed over my nipple, drowning me in fresh heat. My brain gave up trying to process anything, and I just moaned and clutched at his hair. For once, he didn't shake me off, tugging my pincher back and forth with his tongue until my veins filled up with lightning and I could hardly bear the pleasure of it. He glanced up, panting and disheveled. My lipstick had travelled from my mouth to his, to everywhere his mouth had touched me, which meant I had painted nipples. It was the most brazen thing I'd ever seen, and I wished I'd thought of it.
I take it you don't mind me showing up, then? I asked.
He traced a hot, wet stripe up the side of my neck, making my pulse flutter at the realization of its vulnerability.
If I still possessed the capacity for rational thought, I might consider it ill-advised.
I wasn't sure I liked that answer, but my own ability to have thinking happen was not so great either right then.
You look.
He seemed to lose track of what he was saying. He dragged a hand along the outside of my thigh until he came to the top of my hold-ups. Slipping a single finger beneath the band, he pulled it outward, and then let it go so that it snapped sharply back into place. It didn't really hurt, but it made such a loud crack that I gasped anyway.
I look what?
Wicked beyond belief.
I nodded happily.
You should show me my place.
And where's that?
Wherever you want me. Begging for whatever you think I deserve.
Right now.
His eyes closed for a moment, though not before I caught the flare of passion and cruelty my words had ignited.
I think you deserve to be fucked. I think you deserve to be fucked until all you can do is scream my name.
I could have come on the idea alone.
God, yes! I breathed. Yes, please!
He gave a shaky laugh.
This is my office, Arden. I keep pens here, not lube, and there are ways I don't want to hurt you.
I'd gone without once before. It hadn't been the worst thing in the world, and it would have probably passed into actively okay if the other guy had been just a touch less eager to plunge his man spear into my succulent dude hole. But thankfully that wasn't an issue tonight. It's okay, I said. I was a Boy Scout. I came prepared. I gave him a little push so he was standing between my legs. Then, putting my years of dedicated yoga to good use, I took an ankle in each hand and split myself like a wishbone. He was staring at me. That, well, a quite specific and currently very exposed part of me. And having him do that hit me right on that perfect edge between exciting and embarrassing where they all got muddled up. It needed a word. There must have been one in German.
You were a Boy Scout.
He sounded a bit preoccupied, almost as if that wasn't at all what he was really thinking about. For 5 minutes, or whatever, before they kicked me out for being a raging queer, I smiled at him in what I hoped was a winning manner, and flexed some intimate muscles in a saucy wink. Now, about that fucking me till I scream thing. He glanced up, as swift and sure as a wolf scenting blood, and as ferocious.
Don't move, he told me.
I'd been feeling pretty audacious with the whole do me move, but I hadn't quite anticipated being stuck like that, all laid out for his taking, bound by his command. But holy shenanigans, it was hot. I whimpered earnestly. I won't, Mr. Hart. And was rewarded by a low growl of approval and pleasure from Caspian. I was glad to see him fumble very slightly with his belt as he released his cock. We were both so fired up I thought he'd slam into me like a train. But he came into me neither carefully nor roughly, just relentlessly, filling me up slowly so that I felt every inch of him as he took possession of me. There was enough lube to ease his way, but the deep stretch was almost an echo of pain, and it made me pant and cling tight to my ankles. By the time he was all the way in, I was moaning softly at the back of my throat, my sweat slicking the glass beneath me. I loved this, holding him inside me. That kind of, oh, hey, there's a man in my body. The slight physical and emotional shock of it, and the way it made me feel vulnerable and strong and right all at the same time. He pulled out part way, adjusted his angle, and hit my happy spot so perfectly I had to turn my face into my shoulder to smother the epically grateful noise I made. He caught my chin and pulled me back.
Don't do that.
I'm not going to...
There's nobody to hear but me, and I want to hear you.
Okay. It turned out that was straightforward. I wasn't sure how successfully I'd have been able to hold back if I'd tried. He fucked me mercilessly, with a precision and a power that left me an incoherent, trembling mess on his desk, my whole body rocking with the thrusts I held myself open for. Being fucked that way, and helpless to do anything but take it and feel it, was insanely intense. My hands were slippy and my legs were aching and my arse stung a little bit from his thrusts, but somehow that just made everything even better. Best of all, though, I got to watch. I got to see him pushing into me, framed by the V of my legs, the tender skin of my thighs looking paler than usual in contrast to the dark nylon of the stockings. I got to watch my cock bouncing between us, hard and flushed and shiny with pre-cum, my balls drawn up tight beneath. And I got to watch him, gorgeously unraveled with his tie askew and his hair mussed from my fingers, perspiration gleaming at his temples and this tight line of concentration between his brows, the strained ecstasy in his half-closed eyes and the softer bliss of his parted lips, like an untouching kiss. That was when the phone rang, It gave me such a fright that I arched right off the desk, my arse death-clamping around his cock.
What?
I gasped.
That would be the call I was expecting.
He sounded impressively calm, considering he was literally inside me.
Oh, awkward?
I expected he would either pull out or that we'd unconvincingly try to ignore the call. What I didn't expect was that he'd take it. The only warning he gave me was a stern,
"Don't move, Arden,"
before leaning over me to hit the speaker button. I froze, legs akimbo, trying to hold in a horrified yip. Caspian said something in, I guess, Japanese, and received a longish reply, while I lay there, terrified of the sound of my own breathing, almost unbearably aware of my own body and trying not to squirm, or do anything that might reveal what was going on to the person, or people. Fuck, what if it was people on the other end of the line? I couldn't tell if I was panic-stricken or aroused beyond all reason. My cock was definitely on the second team. Caspian was still talking, rattling off, I don't know, figures, maybe. Out of the corner of my eye, I caught our reflection in the window. I looked like the virgin sacrifice in a Victorian horror. This pale shape, yielding rapturously beneath the shadow of Caspian. I'd never felt quite so penetrated. Or so aware of it, anyway. The hot stretch and the pressure of him inside me. It made me wish he had fangs to sink into the tender flesh of my bared throat. Just then he dragged a finger all the way up the underside of my cock. My mouth fell open on a soundless scream. I was going to come, or die, or both. Oh God, oh God, oh God! Caspian put a hand over my mouth, which I was grateful for, and also found super hot, so it was helpful and not helpful. I thrashed. Though given my position, pinned and impaled and teetering on the verge of a deliriously exciting feargasm, it was more of an undignified wriggle. Somehow I got myself under control, my teeth scraping against his palm as I muffled my whimpers. A pause. Then Caspian murmured something, his tone politely encouraging, and the conversation resumed. It should have been more incongruous. Him dealing with whatever he was dealing with while I was shuddering helplessly on his cock. But it was the same thing, really, wasn't it? Utter command of his universe. From the financial empire he ruled to the lover panting and writhing on his desk. I honestly thought he'd be at his most remote. I didn't know how else he could be responding with such ease and precision in a language that wasn't even his own. But then he glanced down at me, and I didn't think I'd ever seen him quite that out of control. With his hair sweat heavy over his brow, and his cheeks all sex flushed with heat and exhilaration. His eyes were bright with cruelty, but there was something softer, too. Something heartbreakingly innocent. Joy, maybe. It was a good job I was gagged. I mean, I could probably avoid having a screaming orgasm while he was on speakerphone with Tokyo, but no power on earth would have stopped me blurting out, "I love you!" I kissed his hand instead, and he smiled at me. This perfect film star smile. Then he started, as if maybe, just maybe, he'd lost track of the discussion the teeniest, tiniest bit. Thankfully, he couldn't see me smirking under his palm. He said something fairly sharp in response to whatever the other man was telling him and reached into the interior pocket of his jacket, pulling out a fountain pen of such sleek, gold-edged simplicity it must have been worth more than my family's house. Twisting off the lid with a practiced motion, he brought the nib to the planes of my abdomen and scribbled something across my skin. I squinted down my own body, trying to see. Numbers. A series of numbers. It was a weird sensation. A little bit scratchy, a little bit tickly. Not really pleasure, not quite pain, but... oh, God, the ownership of it. The casual way he marked me and claimed me, turned me into his personal Google Keep, and oh, fuck, fuck, I was going to lose it completely. He must have realized. Probably he couldn't have failed to, given my curling toes and the straining muscles in my thighs. The noises he was almost managing to contain in his hand. A few more notes I could barely keep still for, and a hasty, I assumed, goodbye. And the line went dead with the sweetest click I'd ever heard in my life. The moment my mouth was free, I let out this mortifying banshee wail of sex need. Caspian's pen clacked against the desk. And then he was fucking me. Fucking me hard enough to rattle the glass and judder my bones, and it was perfect. The pleasure as inexorable as the hammering of his cock against my prostate, coiling so tightly inside me it was like being strangled. In a good way. Maybe, I wasn't sure. I sucked it in a sobbing breath. Oh God, Caspian, please, oh God, please! Fuck knew what I was begging for. More, less, the luxurious liberty of begging itself. I didn't know. I didn't care. Just Caspian! Tears leaked from the corners of my eyes. Moisture pooled on my stomach from my cock. I was starting to slide on the desk, driven back with every harsh shove into me. The scent of us, sex and sweat and the last honeyed bass notes of Caspian's cologne hung heavy in the air. And the sounds we made together had turned ugly. The wet slap of skin and the squelch of lube, his ragged breaths and my frantic cries. But it was all beautiful somehow. The reality of sex. Rough and raw and glorious. And when he finally wrapped a hand around my cock, I came hard and instantly. Relief pushing me over the edge and then almost into unconsciousness with the baseball bat of orgasm. Breath snatching. Heart bursting. Like thunder inside me. Racking me from fingers to toes. To the ends of my fucking hair. Muscles just weren't happening anymore. My hands dropped. My legs fell curling around Caspian. But he was probably too far gone to notice. He half collapsed on top of me. His face pressed against my neck and came to. Almost silently. In great body-shaking heaves. I forced my arms into action and got them round him. Held him tight. A stolen embrace when he was closest and most lost to me. I was utterly sex-dazed, but it wasn't an ideal situation for a languorous afterglow. Caspian was heavy, and the glass was hard, and my arse had that wet, well-fucked feeling that made me slightly self-conscious about the mess I might be making on his desk.
"You'd better rescue your nose," I mumbled. "Because I'm seriously... oh, fuck!"
Whatever he'd written was nothing but sweaty, pale blue smears.
"I'm really sorry. Was it important?"
"Yes." A pause. "Which is why I memorized what I needed."
I'd been so ready to feel awful that I ended up giggling instead. And then wrote on me anyway.
"I'm afraid..."
He looked almost abashed.
"I wasn't thinking all that clearly."
"It's okay."
It was super hot. His fingers followed my tattoo over my hip.
"But I know I wanted to claim a little piece of you."
"You can claim all of me."
"My beautiful Arden."
He smiled at me. but there was something almost sad about it. His hands soft on my body.
In some ways you are unconquerable, and I wouldn't have it otherwise.
Write on me again. I wriggled enticingly, if somewhat stickily.
Write what?
Anything you like. How about Caspian plus Arden forever in a big heart? That earned me an exasperated look. I prodded him with my foot. Please, it doesn't even have to be romantic.
I'm not literary like you.
You mean you've never stumbled across some words arranged into an order you quite liked? Ever?
It's not that.
He picked the pen back up and absently fiddled with it, twisting its lid round and round between his fingers.
I'm afraid I find it rather exposing.
Caspian, I came to your office practically naked.
Yes, but you chose to do that.
Oh, fuck. He had a point. I was being super pushy, and one person's risky titillation was another person's excruciating nightmare. I'm sorry. Ignore me. You don't have to. He leaned down, smushing our two hot bodies together in a way that was only okay because we just had the best sex ever, and kissed me.
No, I'll do it. I just need to think what to write.
But I don't want you to do something that makes you uncomfortable.
You do many uncomfortable things for me.
I blushed, very aware that I was sort of dripping on his desk. They're things I like doing, though.
And in return, there are ways I'm willing to be uncomfortable for you.
He slid the lid off the pen, found a bit of me that he liked that wasn't too sweaty, and began to write. I couldn't see much except his head bent over me, but that just made me feel what he was doing all the more intensely. The sharp, delicate pressure made my toes curl, and imagine what it might be like if it was a blade he held. "What does it say?" I asked when he was done, since all I could make out was a ribbon of blue across my hip and stomach. He gave me an unreadable smile.
You'll have to wait and see.
That was when I realized I'd spent so long sweating the arriving part of this little escapade that I hadn't given any thought at all to the leaving. The idea of pulling my gorgeous new coat over my seriously sexed body and limping wetly into a taxi was 1,000,000% the wrong uncomfortable. Did Caspian keep spare clothes in his office? It was a posh building. Maybe there would be an on-site employee gym or something, with a shower I could use.
What's wrong? Did I hurt you?
Caspian pulled away abruptly. But since not so very long ago he would have taken me being poist-coitally tense as an invitation to run like hell, this was definitely progress. I sat up, gingerly, pressing my knees together and folding my hands over my dick, in what was a pretty belated act of modesty. No, not at all. Just, fretting about logistics.
Logistics?
Yeah. I need to get back somehow. Caspian was silent for a long moment. Apart from the fact that there was cum and ink on his shirt from where our bodies had pressed against each other, he looked, well, almost put together, whereas I was wrecked from eyes to arse. Then he leaned in and brushed back a lock of hair that had gone off on a frolic on its own when I'd been too busy having sex to keep it under control.
Don't worry about that. You can stay with me.
Are you sure? I asked, with fucking extraordinary nonchalance. From the look on his face, I didn't think he was all that sure. But he nodded anyway. And, damn it, I would take it.
Here,
He took off his shirt and wrapped it round me. It was warm from him and smelled of him. Quite pungently of him, actually, considering what we'd just been doing. And being ridiculously expensive, it was soft and smooth against my still oversensitive skin. Of course it was way too big for me, brushing my stocking tops. But I was totally okay with that. It felt like being in Caspian's arms. Once I was only partially indecent. He helped me down off the desk. We stared a moment at the imprints we'd left on the glass. Smudges of heat and sweat. And other fluids. He didn't quite facepalm, but his palm hovered perilously close to his face.
What in God's name was I thinking? This was so unprofessional.
It seemed sensible to brace myself for a cavalcade of regret. I hung my head.
Sorry.
Don't be silly, Arden. I was as responsible for it as you.
But I turned up in a... I made an awkward gesture. Provocative way.
Yes, and I chose to respond by fucking you on my desk, which I enjoyed very much.
Really? I shot him a silly, happy smile. You aren't freaking out?
No.
It was still bad of me, though. You should, you know, probably spank me later. He laughed and pulled me unexpectedly into something I could only call a hug. Squeezed me so tightly, so desperately, I nearly ran out of breath.
Oh, Arden, you're incorrigible.
I nodded into his chest.
Please, never stop.
No intention of it, I mumbled. Though what I was thinking was, please never stop holding me like this. Of course he did. And if he hadn't, it would have been awkward. What, us having to eat and go to the toilet and have separate lives and things. But I could have taken a little bit more of being hugged like that. A lot more, to be honest. Chapter 11. Once we were untangled, he led me over to a different lift. The doors were so discreet I hadn't even noticed them the last time I'd been here. And tonight I'd been a bit busy for sightseeing. I was just staring blankly, but the pressure of his hand at the small of my back propelled me forward.
Make yourself at home,
he told me.
I need to clean up and finish my work, but I'll be with you as soon as I can.
It took a moment or two for the implication of his words to sink in. Wait, you live here?
I have several houses. This is one of the places I stay when I need to.
Since I was still non-functional, he pressed the button for me.
See you soon.
A few seconds later, I was blundering into his apartment. Or rather, one of the places he stayed in. While it had clearly been decorated in a no-expense-spared way Caspian favoured, it was nowhere near as opulent as One Hyde Park. In fact, in billionaire terms, it was positively monkish. No personal touches, but I hadn't really expected it. The austerity, if nothing else, was Caspian. The emphasis on smooth wood and polished stone, the slightly overwhelming sense of space created by the high ceilings and the triple aspect windows. The Sahara Noir marble floors, beautiful though they were slippery and chill beneath my feet, which meant my most overriding impression of Caspian's penthouse was that it needed a goddamn rug or two. I penguin shuffled into the bathroom, which was yet more marble, relieved, if you could call it that, by granite and gold, and reluctantly divested myself of Caspian's shirt. Then tried to figure out what he'd written. Which wasn't exactly that straightforward, since it was either upside down, if I use my eyes, or back to front, if I used a mirror. In the end, I took a photo with my phone. I was trying to get a good angle on the words, but it turned out to be a pretty good angle on me. I twisted round to expose the writing, so my body was all sleek curves and sharp edges. And for once my bony bits and squeezy bits were working in harmony instead of contriving to make me look like a knobbly gazelle. My leg was conveniently in the way of my junk, so it wasn't porny. More suggestive with the laddered thigh highs, the smudgy bruise shadows on my flanks, and the vulnerable ridges of my clavicles. This was so getting a grainy filter and going on Instagram. I zoomed in so I could see what Caspian had written. It was two lines curling neatly over my hip, a bit like my tattoo. What will the creature made all of sea drift do on the dry sand of daylight? What will the mind do each morning waking? Well, so much for an Oxford education. I had no idea what it was from. I could have Googled it, of course, but that would have felt like cheating. I touched the loops where the ink was already blurring. Kind of a shame to wash it off straight away. Except Caspian would be along at some point, and I didn't want to greet him smelling like the bargain basement option at a bordello. He had one of those walk-in shower room type things, with about 80 multi-directional settings for water to blast you unpleasantly in the face. When I found one that wasn't overwhelmingly painful and hitting the right parts of my body, I had a hasty wash and enjoyed unparalleled views of the London skyline. It felt weird to be soaping my bits and staring at the dome of St. Paul's, but that was my life now. Curtains, I was starting to realize, were a poor people invention. If you were rich enough, you just got to move the entire world out of your way. As I dried off, I fretted slightly about Caspian being witness to the carnage that was my hair post-shower. But then I remembered I'd vomited on his feet, shown him my asshole, and begged him on several occasions to spank me. So probably he could deal with my duckish floof. There was, however, still no sign of him, which left me at a loss. He'd said I should make myself comfortable, but I wasn't sure where to start because everything was showroom perfect. And showroom anonymous. I only managed to figure out which bedroom was his because there were suits in the wardrobe, and it felt all kinds of creepy having to look. I did have a little wonder, in case I'd missed where Caspian really lived, but no. All I found was a series of empty, pristine rooms, and a door I couldn't open. Which was weird, right? Edging into super weird. Because why was it there? What was behind it? And who the fuck did that? It wasn't even like he'd known I was coming and thought to himself,
"Better secure my priceless collection of Fabergé eggs before Arden accidentally breaks them."
It was just there. A locked room, permanently in his apartment. I mean, was Caspian a vampire? And this was where he chained up his blood doll? Or was he your regular, commoner garden kidnapper? Maybe he was a masked vigilante and this was where he kept his cape. Or he was one of those conspiracy theorist types and the walls would be covered in maps and newspaper clippings, connected by bits of string. Or probably it was a room he happened to have that happened to be inaccessible. And I was massively overreacting. After all, he didn't owe me unfettered access to his past, his heart, or the place where he lived. I wasn't Judith running about Duke Bluebeard's castle believing love was the answer to every question and the key to every lock. Well, apart from the bit where I was ransacking Caspian's apartment. Literally looking for a key to a lock. So I could open a door that was at least 80% metaphor at this point. In any case, I was spoiled. And trying to bash my way in cop show style didn't work either. It just hurt my shoulder. Hurt my shoulder quite a lot, actually. So I retreated to what I concluded was the master bedroom, and slipped under the cool, crisp covers of the huge and ridiculously comfortable bed, gazed out of the unavoidable windows. How did Caspian